This is Robin Mejia here with Makoto Kuro on March 7th, 2006 in his office at UT Southwestern for the second day of the Pew Oral History Interview. So when we left off yesterday, it was sort of right, we had just been talking about, you know, you had just published the results of your sort of 5 years of intense work in Japan, and that was about to lead into many big things. But when I was reviewing the tapes, I just had a couple of questions that I wanted to start out with before we get back in there. At what point in your schooling did you learn English?
All Japanese students learn English at the junior high school, so around age 12, 13, and high school, in high school, students usually take English courses, and some students take French classes or German class, but maybe 99% of the students take English class in high school too. So in total, 6 years, 3 years junior high school education, 3 years high school education, so total 6 years of English classes. But the problem is teachers are all Japanese. So, yeah, I think probably Japanese are very good at English education in Japan. It's, I think, very good how to read English, how to write English, or, but, you know, speaking and hearing is another thing. So that's why most Japanese are not very good at speaking and hearing English, but probably very good at grammar and spelling and writing or reading. Maybe. Yeah, that's interesting.
That makes a lot of sense. Because they're two different things. English, written English isn't always phonetic either. But and so was that 6 years is a while. That was enough so that when you were at a point where you wanted to publish and needed to write, was you able to more or less do that fairly independently then?
Yeah. So of course nobody uses English there. So if you learn English in high school, usually we lose everything if you don't keep reading or writing English. But in medical school, we sometimes use English textbooks, and of course after graduation we need to read English papers. So we had a chance to continuously expose to English reading especially. So that helps me to a lot to write up the my own article. But you know, it's so all English I read is on the medical journal. So it's just I don't know anything about a conversation or how to say order in McDonald's or how to check in the hotel or something like that. We don't know nothing about that, but know how to write a scientific sentence. That's very weird, but yeah. But so I think many Japanese scientists or medical doctors can somehow write or read English journals, but of course they are very different in ability.
Right. Well, I imagine staff at major journals are probably used to working with people on their English when they need to.
Yeah, actually Nature editorial office helps me a lot. Maybe, yeah, almost, so they revise each sentence, sentence by sentence, and yeah, it's actually very different from my original writing, but that makes article much more shorter and more comprehensive and understandable, readable, easy to read for any people. So that was good.
And this kind of brought up another question I was thinking about. During your, you know, medical training, initially you said you were very focused on the clinical side, and that was your intent, was to be a medical, to be a clinician and doctor. How much were you tracking journals and research during that point? Did you have time for that, or were you kind of...
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, I so in after graduating medical school, during the internship, I don't have any time to track on basic research journals. But when I came back to the Tokyo University, I started some basic research. So naturally, I need to read some related topics. And yeah, so at that time, there's no PubMed there's no good database search method. So we just read the specific journals. Like at that time, I read several, of course, Nature, Science, something like that. But I'm interested in the cardiology, so I read some journals like circulation research or circulation, some specific journals. So I had some time to read such papers, but maybe it's a little bit biased. we don't have any good database search method at the time. But something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then just kind of two more here before we come back up to time. Mm-hmm. You talked about visiting Dr. Nagai in Florida. Mm-hmm. But how did you meet him originally? Did you know him from your time here?
Yes. Actually, when I was... So I told you that I spent some time when I was medical student, a summer vacation for a couple of months, and he was in Japan at that time.
Okay.
And he left the Japan just maybe a couple of months later.
Okay.
But at the time he was still there, and I had a chance to meet him. And but at that time, of course, I just met him and say hello and something like that. But he went to the University of Vermont, and actually the boss of the laboratory gave me a chance to go to the University of Vermont because Dr. Nagai was there. So and I spent 2 months there at University of Vermont. So that was the first time for me to closely interacting with him.
Okay.
So actually his boss actually had me to meet Dr. Nagai.
And okay. So he may have talked to his boss and said, I know this.
Yeah, so
this doctor in Japan is really smart, and can we bring him over for a couple months?
Yeah, that's probably boss said, I have a student that he wants to visit United States and see something like that. So, yeah.
Okay. And so that's when you two kind of got to go and know each other, which led to him kind of pulling you back towards research here.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And then kind of moving up closer to where we were yesterday, I was struck by this when I was looking at your papers beforehand and again when I was listening to the tapes. It does sound like you really took off on a pretty novel path after you got your PhD, when you decided to figure out which gene had been knocked out in your mutant.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a big decision? Was that just self-evident?
Well,
like, what kind of convinced you that you could go do this thing that nobody else was doing?
Right. to tell the truth, at that time, I didn't feel that I made a big decision because I made mice and found very interesting feedback. So naturally, I just wanted to know what was going on in that mice. To do that, I had to give up clinical duties. So that very natural way to go. But after several years later, when I think when I thought about my career, that I realized that that was really a big decision. But at the time, I didn't realize that that would be a big decision, because I just wanted to know what is, was going on in that particular month. So, yeah. But that required me to change my career, so that's why I did that. That's it.
Okay. And then, in terms of you described fairly eloquently yesterday sort of what you did to find that gene and determine that it was responsible for what you saw. You also mentioned that you were working pretty independently at the National Institute at that point. Mm-hmm. So how did you go about, you know, finding the tools and techniques and figuring out what to do next? Was that from just talking to other researchers there, from literature, from how did you determine your course of action?
So did something experimental design or something like that?
Did you design the experiment that sounds so clear and obvious when you say it after the fact?
Right. I had a background about on the molecular biology. So cloning of the gene was technically not very challenging for me, but of course the area I need to look at was very big, so I thought it would be very laborious work. But basically all the techniques necessary to do that for the identification of the gene, I just used the conventional molecular biological technique that I learned from Dr. Nagai. So technically it was not very challenging, but the amount of the sequence we need to analyze was pretty big, so that took me a lot of time and labor. And sometimes I just show the line, but that line represents maybe 10,000 kilobase or more, 100 kilobase or more. So we can get some genomic fragments. It's not so very difficult to get the genomic fragment surrounding the insertion site. But but we need to know which portion encodes the actual protein, exon. So identification of the exon in this region took almost 2 years maybe for me to identify potential exon sequence. So but maybe technique I used the technique learned from Dr. Nagai, and the method were just got from literature, old literature. And the good thing is that in the Department of Molecular Biology had several faculty members, and two of them worked on fly genetics. So actually this kind of experiments, so they are routinely doing that kind of work. So in fly genetics, they pick up some interesting mutant and identify which gene was disrupted in that fly. So completely the same thing in fly, but in mice, genome size is much bigger, so the analysis is a little bit more complicated, but theoretically or principle of the experiment was almost the same. So I sometimes get some advice from such fly guys, and that was really helpful. That was really lucky for me too. So fly genetist was next door for me, so that was really lucky.
That makes sense. So then kind of moving forward to, mm-hmm. to where we were yesterday, which mm-hmm. is you'd gotten the results and
okay.
the paper mm-hmm. came out and uh-huh. you were just starting, mm-hmm. I think just before wrapped up, you were just kind of starting to explain mm-hmm. sort of the reaction of the scientific community, what
yes.
happened next in your career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, at that time, there was no mammalian model for aging. So probably the Croton mutant mouse was the first example of the human aging in general. So actually there are a couple of aging model mice at the time, but it's called senescence accelerated mice, SAM, SAM mouse. But they are a natural mutant, and the inheritance of the aging phenotype is very, very complicated, probably because of the multiple gene mutations causes the aging phenotype. So nobody knows what genes are mutated in that particular mice. Or more importantly, there are several substrains in some mice, and each substrain express, let's say substrain 1 express exhibit Alzheimer-like phenotype, and substrain number 2 express some, say, another aging-like phenotype. So any single substrain express multiple aging-like phenotypes. So as you know, characteristic feature of the aging is a single individual get multiple diseases. That's a very characteristic in aging. So, but these mutant mice did not have such kind of multiple phenotypes in a single individual. So in that sense, Croton mutant mice was the first example of the aging. So, yes, but impact was, I think, really big, but at the same time, nobody knows what the gene is doing. So, I mean, what the Croton protein is doing, nobody knows at the time. So, everybody thinks that was very, that it's very interesting finding, but there's no clue to the next step at the time. So, so maybe after publishing the Croton gene paper in Nature, there was no major publication probably for more than several years. So, I provided many Croton mutant mice to many researchers, and they look at. They are interested in particular phenotypes. They interested in, so let's say I gave it to ophthalmologist and he looked at whether they have cataract or not, and I gave the mouse to cardiologist and they look at whether arteriosclerosis, how the arteriosclerosis is going on, something like that. But it's a kind of descriptive study and not getting too deeply into the mechanism of the disease or Croton protein function. So, it was good I could publish the paper, but next step was pretty much invisible at that time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, scientifically, the next step was invisible, mm-hmm. but maybe could you talk a little bit about what happened next mm-hmm. in your career? I mean, mm-hmm. were you invited to talk
yes.
on this? Did people,
yeah.
did
mm-hmm.
you become more of a name?
Yeah,
so
I got an invitation of many institutes at that time. And at that time, I was a postdoc. So naturally, I wanted to get to be an assistant professor or want to have my own lab independent laboratory. But as you know, in Japan, it's a little bit difficult to get totally independent before age, say, 40. So, actually, my exposure, I said I belonged to the molecular biology department in the National Institute of Neuroscience, and the chairman of that department was Dr. Nabeshima, Yoichi Nabeshima. Nabeshima, that might be difficult to. Yoichi Nabeshima. So he actually, he used to work on the, he's a PhD, and he is a basic scientist, and he works on the muscle development for a long time. And, he is also very interested in clotomice, and he actually get very famous because of the cloto mutant mice. And he after publishing the Nature paper, he planned to move to another university, Osaka University, and he offered me a position at so under his control, so I couldn't be independent if I accepted his offer. So I wanted to be independent, and I wanted to have my own laboratory. But it might be too early for me in Japanese society. So I have almost accepted his offer, but when I came to the UT Southwestern and gave a seminar, and I met Dr. Friedberg, the chairman of this department, and he offered me a very good independent position and laboratory space and startup funds. So, but it was, I never think about coming to the United States. I was looking for a position in Japan, so I never thought about coming here, coming to the States. So I couldn't decide that immediately. I need to talk with my wife, of course, and but eventually I decided to come here because the main reason was because I will be able to have my own independent laboratory. And the second, as long as I continue cloto research in Japan, I had to, Dr. Nabeshima would be very influential, and all the work I would do in Japan might be not very fairly evaluated. So, you know what I mean? So actually, in Japan, there is a big boss. And several, so it's a kind of hierarchy. So everybody knows that the boss never do the actual experiment, but the assistant professor level or postdoc level people doing the actual research. And but the all the publication would be usually corresponding also would be the big boss. So in Japan, everybody knows the system. So everybody knows, the corresponding author is the famous guy, but probably this work it was done by the last one, but one also, or something like that. So in Japan, everybody knows. But if you publish it in, if the scientist in Europe, United States reads the paper, 100% people believe that this work was done by the big boss. So there's a kind of discrepancy between the publication style and the actual work was done by whom. So if I stayed in Japan and work with Dr. Nabeshima and publish many paper, if I did that, but still people not believe that this work was done by Dr. Nabeshima's laboratory. So that was not actually very fair for me. So I really wanted to get independent from him. And of course, if I can find a good position in Japan, that would be one choice. But the maybe moving to the United States would make the things more clear. So if I can publish a good paper from my own laboratory in the United States, nobody, the things are very clear. So this work was done by myself and not by Dr. Nabeshima, something like that. So that's one thing. But of course, another reason is I really wanted to see what is going on in the United States in basic science area. So I've never had a chance to visit United States. Well, of course, I visited University of Vermont, but it just when I was medical school and it's just 2 months, it's not enough to see everything. So I really wanted to look at how basic research is going on in the United States. So yeah, that's the two major reasons why I moved to the UT Southwest.
That makes sense. Yeah. Could you describe just, since it sounded like you said you weren't actively looking in the U.S., even though you ended up with the offer, can you kind of describe, how did you end up coming here for a seminar? How did that all kind of, I think you said you went to another conference first?
Yes. So in 1997, it was November, so there was a American Heart Association meeting, and I submitted my abstract to the meeting. So I it was in Florida, Orland. And I went there, and but at that time the paper was not published yet, but the paper was published November 7th, I remember. It's just before the publication of the Nature paper, but Dr. Yanagisawa was in this campus, knew that I was working on Kuroto mice and isolated the Kuroto gene, and the paper was accepted to Nature, so he invited me to speak here. So I just went to the AHA meeting and just stopped by Dallas and gave a seminar. And the end of the feedback of the meditation, but I couldn't decide, so I went back to Japan and think about 4 months or so whether I should accept his offer or I should still search for a position in Japan. But in Japan there are several professor positions available for me, but several candidates applied for a single position, so there's no guarantee that I can get the position. So in Japan, the position, the professor was selected by voting by the other professors. So it's a little, there is a little bit political thing, and I don't know whether I can be professor in Japan, so, but yeah, Dr. Friedberg's offer was just yes or no. If I accept it, I can have so, the laboratory.
So he made the offer during your trip?
Right. I'm really surprised. I didn't know him at all. And I first met him, and I just talked with him and showed my data, and I'm doing something like this. And I just talked with him 10 minutes or so. But he offered me the position at the spot. So I was really surprised. So he... I don't know why he had he did that, but maybe he my work was a little bit related to his research interest, because he is working on DNA repair system, and that is actually directly related to aging. So maybe that's why he was very interested in my research. So and. Fortunately, at the time, he got an endowed scholar program offer. So Department of Pathology can take one junior faculty using that particular endowment. So he was actively looking for a junior faculty at the time. So that was really good timing for me. So that fit his research interest and his budget, and yeah, everything fit fine.
Right, that would have been, I was thinking that was probably the first year of that program, right?
Yes, right. So I didn't know at all about the program, but Dr. Friedberg said to me that I would offer $600,000 for a startup fund. So it's a lot of money. And in addition, of course, I can get independent laboratory space. Yeah, it's really a good offer. So, but there is a, it's United States, so that's a big move for me. So I was 38 at the time. So 38, so it's already brain is getting more stiff, and it's getting harder and harder to learn new things, and especially new languages. So that was a really big factor for me to when I decide to come here. So can I? So I don't know how the students are educated, what the education is going on in the States. I had no idea about how the granting system works in the United States. So totally different. So, but anyway, his offer was really good. I cannot resist.
And how did your wife react?
Well, she's at first she really didn't like to move to the United States. So she's 37, 1 year younger than me, but still 37. And he, unfortunately, she took French when she was high school. The 1% of the very rare case. And she learned French literature in the university, so her English was, she had no English at that time. So naturally she didn't want to be here, but yeah, but anyway, the position, to improve my career, there was no choice to be here, so I persuaded her, and she eventually said okay. Yeah, of course, she had a very difficult time for the first several months. And she had no English and no friends, no... so she actually, she never drove in Japan. So, as you know, here in Dallas, without car, she cannot be anywhere. So, but there are several Japanese families in the UT Southwestern, and I actually some Japanese postdocs in Dr. Goldstein and Brown Lab helped us a lot. So actually, we knew their family when I was in Japan, because we worked for the same department in University of Tokyo. And actually, my family and his family lived on the same condominium in Japan for several months, so we knew each other very well. So, so their family helped us a lot. And his name was Dr. Shimano, and his wife helped my wife a lot, and taking her everywhere, where to buy the food, or where to buy the daily stuffs, and where the closest Target and some Tom Sandals. Yeah, that really helped me, actually. So she gradually getting used to the American style of life, and she also went to community college to learn English as a second language. So ESL, she took ESL classes in the local community college, and yeah, she did pretty well, and she graduated 2 years. Before, 2 years ago, it was really good for her, and she got some friends there, and she, of course, learned English, and you know, now maybe she is enjoying the life much more better than myself, maybe. And yeah, women are very strong. Anyway. Yeah.
Yes, that does sound like a fairly big move.
Yes, indeed.
What did your parents think?
Well, yeah, actually many MDs in Tokyo University spend several years, maybe 3-4 years, in the laboratory of the United States to learn the experiments, or to look at what is going on in the United States. So my parents thought that I'm just spending several years, a couple of years, and we'll be back soon. So that's okay, something like that. It's a good experience for you. But it's already 8 years, almost 8 years since I left Japan. So yeah, my parents, but they they probably think that as long as I am successful here, they would be okay, because eventually children need to get independent from their parents. Well, but they are getting very old, and I'm a little bit worried about it. And actually, my father got stroke 2 years ago, and his left side is a little bit paralyzed. But my sister lives very close to the parents, so she can take care of them. So that's good for me. So every time I had a chance to get back to Japan to give a seminar or I always stop by my parents and see how they are doing. And but maybe I have this year I will have a chance to get back to Japan 3 times. That's good for me. So yeah, that's my only concern in Japan. But mm-hmm. otherwise, yeah, they think yeah they will be fine as long as I'm happy here.
Okay, I think I'm going to flip this over here.
Okay.